Blind Cool Tech, 44, July 12th, 2005. In the office with me today, we have a special guest, Dr. Terry Turlaw. Hey, Terry.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, how are you?
Great, it's great to be here with you, Larry.
Well, glad to have you, and I understand you're going to be talking to us about a exciting, fairly new product from APH called the K-Sonar.
Yes, I am. And I have a whole lot to say about it. And not only will you be hearing my voice, but you'll also be hearing the voice of the K-Sonar itself.
Okay.
As we talk about what it does and what its sounds mean.
Well, let's just get right into it then. Take it away.
Okay. First of all, the K-Sonar is a metal device. You can hear me tapping it. Sonar-based device that provides feedback about what's out there in the environment around you, and it provides that feedback by sound. It can be used in your hand or fastened to a cane. It is never, never to be used as your only travel aid. It does not take the place of a cane, a dog guide, or a human guide. Rather, it augments the information that you can get from your primary travel aid. And when combined with a cane, it becomes an important component of a very powerful travel system. So that the warning to not use it by itself is important and necessary because of personal safety. Having said that, however, we're going to spend the rest of our time talking about what the K-Sonar actually does do. As I said before, it's made of metal. Clang, clang, clang. And it is a device that has a right angle in it, a 90-degree angle approximately. It's a little different. It's not quite 90 degrees, but we're not going to quibble. I want you all to get a good sense of what it looks like and feels like. So, the top part of the K-Sonar, before it angles down, is about 4 inches long. It's about maybe an inch, 2 inches tall. No, an inch and a half tall, and maybe an inch thick. You hold it so that the long part goes perpendicular to your body, and it looks, the top part before it angles down looks somewhat like a rectangle, a long, narrow rectangle pointing with its narrow end out from your body. You hold it so that its thinnest side is from left to right. And in the very front of the rectangle is a big screen. This screen, it's really not made of screen like in your screen door. It's a very sophisticated metal. But it feels like a screen. And that is where the ultrasound waves are sent out and are received back. Here's the theory. The theory is a little boring, but I think it's also fascinating. You kind of want to know a little bit about why it does what it does, so that what it does doesn't seem just like magic. I'm going to make the theory as short and sweet as I can. Ultrasound is like very high-pitched sound, higher than we can hear, higher than even dogs or most other animals except bats can hear. Bats use ultrasound to navigate. Sound waves go out, and as you know, sound is absorbed by cushiony stuff, like if you put your head into a couch and talk, most of what you say goes into the couch and you can't hear yourself very well. Whereas if you stand by a really dense concrete wall and talk, you hear an echo back because a lot of what you say, the sound doesn't go through the wall, it comes back to you. The same with ultrasound. Ultrasound goes through, penetrates softer things and does not penetrate harder things. This device analyzes how much ultrasound it sends out and how much it gets back. And based on that, it tells you something about the texture that you're looking at. So that's one thing it does. It tells you about the texture that you're looking at. I'm going to give you an example right now. And we'll see more examples in a moment. But I'm going to point this down at Larry Skutkan's hard floor. And we're going to hear, in a moment, a very fast, shrill sound. It's fairly shrill because a good deal of the ultrasound is being reflected back from the floor. Actually, I've seen some harder floors. This is a softer tile, apparently. I will now take a look at the edge of Larry's desk. And again, we hear a fairly solid sound. Now, we can tell something about texture, but what's the rest of the sound? The pitch changes that you heard, the lower the tone, I don't mean quieter, I mean lower, like you'll, here we go, you're going to hear my example. Bom, 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 that's getting lower. So as the tone goes, bom, okay, that's getting lower. The lower the tone, the closer an object is, the object that the K-sonar is pointing at, is closer. The higher the tone, the farther the object. So here's a higher, here's tones going higher. Da 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 da. Anyway, we don't need that. All right. So much for my operatic debut there, but that's high. So if you hear something going whoop, that means you're getting farther from it. I'm going to demonstrate the closer, farther dimension right now. I am facing Larry's desk, and I'm moving a couple things so that I have enough surface. Actually, I think I'll use this chair. And now, I am very close. Now I'm moving back. You hear the tones getting higher. You'd think any minute that plane was going to take off. This is really high. Now I'm going to move back closer. Hear it get lower, lower, lower. If you were scanning with the K-sonar, you would know that when you heard things reach a certain point of low pitch, that it was time to stop. I'm going to unplug this now for a moment. We're going to listen to this in samples where I can describe what's happening so that we all are on the same page. If you were scanning and you heard the tone getting lower, you know that something is ahead of you and that you want to move around it. When you use this with a cane, you can move around obstacles before you touch them with the cane, thus keeping up your speed. So far we've talked about two dimensions. The K-sonar does distance with pitch. The closer the object, the lower the tone. The farther the object, the higher the tone. It also does different kinds of textures with different kinds of tone colors. We're going to see more of that in a bit. There is another dimension of the K-sonar. You can actually see and therefore hear two objects at once. You can hear simultaneous tones. If there are two objects close together, each in the K-sonar's range, but one is closer to you than the other, you will hear a high tone and a low tone all at the same time. I'm going to see if I can set this one up because I really want you all to hear this. I'm rearranging Larry's office here. The only thing is, I will tell him so he doesn't get up and go splat, right? Okay. Now, right now, we are hearing the sounds made by a chair arm. I'm facing a chair sideways, a wooden chair arm. As I move closer, up slightly above the chair arm, but the arms are still in range, we're getting several tones. I believe that one is the second chair arm and the other is the desk that is behind that second chair arm. They both increase because I'm moving closer and closer to them. And now I'm very close to the desk. And now when we reach this point, I'm actually so close to the desk that it makes no tone. You heard two tones at once. A fourth dimension of the case sonar is the little pulse that you hear down underneath all the sound, the thing that goes, or I can't even do the fast one. You're going to hear a slow pulse and a fast pulse. The case sonar has two ranges, a 5 meter and a 2 meter. When it is in the 5 meter range, that 5 meters is, by the way, about 5 meters a yard, and help me out here, Larry.
15 feet or so.
There you go. It's a little over, 5 meters is a little over 15 feet. It's, I always get my metric conversions a little clogged up when I do them in my head really fast. Anyway, so we have a little over 15 feet range and a little over 6 feet range. The 15 foot range, when you're in that range, you know this because the pulse is slower. And you change ranges with one of the buttons on the case sonar.
Yeah, explain to us the controls
right
on there.
Yes. There are, and these are still on the top rectangle, the one that is long and narrow and points out from your body. Right now, we're hearing a slow pulse. Bum, 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 bum. That tells us that we're in the 5 meter range. I'm going to change that. We're hearing a fast pulse. That tells us we're in the 2 meter range. The case sonar simply has three buttons, little tiny rubber buttons. They're in a triangle. They are on the left side of the rectangle, of the long rectangle, the left side as the screen is pointing away from you. And they're oriented with one button a little closer to the screen and then two buttons vertically right behind the one button. So we have a triangle. The button closest to the screen changes ranges. It simply goes between the 2 meter and the 5 meter. 2 meter, 5 meter. The two buttons that are vertical behind the range button are volume up. That's the one on top. We may not be able to hear the effects of volume up because of the recording program we're doing. It may kind of keep volume a little bit constant. And I'm pushing volume up, and we're pretty much at the maximum volume. And then volume down. Now we're going down, down, down. You can hear it go down. Now we're coming back up. Volume down is the lower of those two vertical buttons. Those are the only controls. It is, the case sonar is turned on. It is used with headphones or an external speaker. Headphones are the best way to use it. When you plug in the headphones, the device is turned on. When you unplug them, it's turned off. So you cannot leave it on by accident.
Now, are these does stereo matter?
The headphones need to be stereo. However, the sound is monaural.
Okay.
The device uses a stereo jack. The same sound is heard in both ears. Therefore, do you need to use headphones in both ears instead of just an earpiece in one? Because the meaning of the sounds really gets into your brain better. And I know this sounds a little odd, folks, but it's really the truth. The meaning of it really gets inside better when you hear it through both ears. Mm-hmm. Very often people begin using the case sonar and suddenly realize that they're understanding a lot more of what the sounds mean than they could possibly verbalize, because it speaks directly to our perceptual capacities. And It doesn't sound like it might, but after about 15 minutes of using it, you would be astounded at how quickly you get a sense of how far something is away from you and a little bit about the nature of what that object might be. I want to briefly speak to we've talked about the top part of the case sonar before it bends downward. Well, let me briefly address the right angle aspect of it. The case sonar device at the back end of the rectangle, which incidentally is where you plug in the headphones, at the back end of the rectangle, it makes a right angle down, and then it has attached to it a little, like a pipe, but a pipe that is doesn't go all the way around. So you can put your finger inside that pipe or shaft. I'm trying to think of an object in life that this reminds me of. Larry, take a look at this and tell me, how would you describe that shaft at the bottom of the case sonar?
It might be easier to say what it does, and I think people will get an idea of what it mm-hmm. looks like. It actually looks like a pipe with about a half an inch to not make the complete circle. So, do you want me to?
Yeah. Here, want me to? Okay. So this is the attachment point for the case sonar to a cane. You attach it by putting this shaft around your cane below the golf grip. The inside of the shaft is bigger than your cane. However, it's not much bigger than your golf grip. It's very slightly bigger than the golf grip. So you put the cane into the open edge of the pipe and pull the case sonar up your cane, move it up your cane until it comes to the golf grip. Then you work it up the golf grip. It'll be a little harder, but we want it to fit snugly. And move it up the golf grip, and as you'll think about it, your golf grips get bigger as you move up toward the what used to be the crook end of the cane. So you slide this case sonar up the golf grip of the cane, and it becomes very well seated so that it won't fall off. The actual rectangle that we've been talking about stays almost parallel with the ground. Not quite, because it's pointing a little bit toward the ground. But you still want the, just like the cane is oriented, straight out in front of you. You want the case sonar to be straight out in front of you and not turned to either side of the cane. You want it to be even between the left and right side of you. So putting it on the cane is just a snap. It's very easy to do. When on the cane, as you use the touch or touch and slide, constant contact, continuous contact techniques, the case sonar scans slightly to the left and slightly to the right and provides you with information about what's around you. It is easier to learn the case sonar by using it in your hand. I want to address how one goes about learning to use this device. If you are developing mobility skills with an orientation and mobility instructor, you and your instructor might decide to work with the case sonar in orientation and mobility lessons. Many instructors do this. It simply depends on, a whole lot of factors that only an orientation and mobility instructor and a student can sit down and assess. If you are an independent traveler, you can teach yourself how the case sonar operates, really by first putting yourself in a very safe environment where there are no stairs or steps, no drop-offs, like indoors for sure, and then practicing handheld, knowing what object you're approaching, listening to how it sounds, moving up to that object, seeing which aspects of it, of the object, really make differences in the sound, and then thinking about why. I'm standing up and moving Larry's furniture again, so bear with me. I want to show you a set of 5 seats. Okay, I'm going to get a little, turn this up because I had turned it down. And I'm going to go to the, right now we're in the slow range. Hear how slow the pulse is? Going to the, and that was the long range. Now we're in the short range. Right now, I'm looking at Larry's floor. Shrill tone. Pretty solid. Now, I'm looking at a series of wires. I want you to hear all the multiple tones from this series of wires. Now, here's the floor. One solid thing. Here's the multiple tones from this series of wires. Plants usually make a very distinct noise because they have so many leaves. We have a plant here, but it has leaves that are very widespread. So we're going to hear, right now, I'm looking down at, from plant leaf to plant leaf. I'm moving around the plant. That's the desk and the floor between the leaves. Now, I have to keep my hand out of the way too. Now there's a leaf. And now I'm looking at the whole plant. And we're really not getting our distinct plant sound on this one because this is a plant whose leaves are very widely spread. Plants actually sound like cicadas. They sound like my version here. Let me show you what Larry sounds like. Here's a person. Excuse me, Larry. I'm just seeing where you are because I want to really get a good... I'm getting closer to Larry. Farther away from Larry. Closer to Larry. Farther away from Larry. A person has almost a watery sound. That's as I think of it, a warbly sound. Because we are largely water. Now, here's the floor again. Now I'm going to look at Larry in the short range. There's Larry. It's more of a warbly sound. Now I'm looking to the left where I'm picking up some things on Larry's desk and the desk itself, and it's a shriller sound. There are several things in this picture, but this is the distinct sound of a person. I've just unplugged myself. I was going to show you Larry's ceiling. One of the interesting things that happens is that you can go into a room and see. Okay, I'm moving up closer to his ceiling in the long range. I think we came unplugged.
Yeah, we did over here too.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can get you fixed back there.
I'm going to show you moving back and forth from Larry's ceiling. And then we're going to just look at a couple of more objects to try to give you an idea of the different textures and different types of objects, and then talk a little bit about what this really is, how this works, and what it's good for.
You should be good now.
Okay. Now I'm looking at Larry's ceiling. Again, it's a shrill sound. And Larry's floor, another shrill sound. I do that to kind of help you all get that sense of contrast. Larry's desk and the edge, what you heard right then is the edge of Larry's desk. So what? We can hear Larry's desk. Okay, let's talk about real life. While Larry's desk is really nice to hear, in real life, as you move with the case sonar, lower tones tell you when obstacles are close and when you want to move around them with your cane. This helps you maintain speed and not have to clang into everything. If you're looking for a specific landmark, you can stop, take the case sonar, slide it off your cane, and use it in your hand. For example, if you're looking for the third opening on the left, you can hand scan that way, pointing it to the left. Count the silences. And because the silence is where there's an opening, there's not going to be anything usually in range. So you know that when you get a silence from the case owner, there's nothing there. That's probably an opening, like an open room or an opening between two buildings. You count those and check out the third one. That saves you a lot of going over and doing some trailing or some touch trailing with the cane. You also can look for specific kinds of landmarks, such as garbage cans or the poles that hold the pedestrian call buttons for lights that are controlled that way. Again, you scan until you hear the sound that you know. I mean, poles are very solid. They're going to make a fairly shrill sound and are going to be fairly narrow. And you can tell that by holding the case owner in your hand and scanning. As you're using it on a cane, you get ongoing information about what's on your left and right. And as you learn to interpret it, for example, if you know that somebody has a wall in their front yard and a tree, and their neighbor has a lot of shrubbery, and on the other side there's just a wall, and those things are a little farther back from the sidewalk that you would just as soon not go, you know, traipsing up into people's yards to look at those landmarks. With practice, people can learn to detect that kind of information with the case owner on the cane. So it becomes both a landmark detector, a way of doing object avoidance, and a perceptual aid. It is really neat for kids, for example, in classrooms, to learn that they can do certain things without touching. For example, counting the number of milk bottles placed in a row on a table. Now, you know, a teacher needs to experiment and have those things far enough apart that they will show up as distinct objects. But counting, playing some games that involve identifying, discriminating between short square things and tall round things, or things made of puffy cotton and things made of wood, all of that can be done with the case sonar. Kind of a closing story. I don't believe he'll mind my mentioning his name. Fred Gassoni, who many of you who have known APH and have known other blindness-related products know. Fred, who is a truly wonderful individual, has a neat story, many neat stories about using the predecessors of the case sonar. And at one time he went into a room and people were going to just see what he could detect about what was around him with the case sonar. So they took him into a room, and Fred can't see. So he's scanning around with the case sonar. He said, "Well, it almost seems like there's a table with something going across it, like a little wall or a little. It's not a wall because it's not hard. It's almost like a net. It was a ping pong table."
Wow.
So, Larry, would you like to come back to any points that we made?
I do have a couple of questions.
Okay.
So in practicality, you don't really use this to, I mean, you wouldn't be using it to look at desks and floors. It's more of to be used with traveling, I would say, or orientation.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. The reason we looked at, you know, obviously desks and floors would be to get the kind of sound that demonstrate things. But you are using it for travel. I'm sorry, please, there was a question. Coming.
Well, I was, one thing too, you mentioned when, you know, that your story with Fred, I can see another terrific use for it is in these situations where you go into a big room and you may get disoriented in that room if you've been there a while and there's a lot of people in there. Wouldn't this be the kind of thing that it would be easy to find the doors and other characteristics of the room to help you stay oriented to your direction and where you are, you know, within the room?
It certainly can be. Some of that will depend on the room itself. However, A wall sounds different when you're facing it squarely on than when you're facing it at an angle.
Hmm.
So I don't have a good clear wall, I don't think. Can I reach
there's
a clear wall?
There's a wall. The wall, the back, the door there?
Yeah.
There's a solid door with a window next to it. That might be interesting.
Let me see if I can get, how close I can get. And we're rigged up with recording gear here.
More wired.
Yes. Okay. Now, as you can hear, I'm approaching a wall. And right now, this, I'm very close to the wall, and I'm facing it pretty squarely. In a room scenario you mentioned is that there are often a lot of people between you and a door, so that you will be seeing, hearing the people.
Right.
And so I would suggest looking for other landmarks. PowerPoint screens up in the front make a nice sound.
Okay.
Even knowing where a sidewall is sometimes gives you an edge.
Now, what about, say, if we went into the mall?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the kind of thing we can count the openings, even though there's such a wide variety of textures between the glass and the stone and the different wall textures and so forth? Can we say, I know that Radio Shack's the fourth door on the right, and get to it fairly reliably?
I think you can, because even though glass and stone and all sorts of textures are going to sound different, an opening, a door is still a door. If the door happens to be clogged with people, you may not hear it as a door. But I want to just mention something when I said headphones, and I really should have mentioned this earlier. When using the headphones that come with the Case Sonar are very non-intrusive.
I was going to ask.
They have a very tiny tip that goes slightly inside the ear, like an earbud, only not nearly as far in as an earbud goes. But they do not cover the ear. They are not circles that are as big as your ear. They're maybe the tip might be like a pencil point, and the headphone itself is maybe as big around as a candy cane. I mean, the circumference of a candy cane. So, they really, of any headphones I've ever seen, they occlude less sound, the least amount of sound. However, they still will block out a tiny bit. So, don't use this device when you're crossing streets or listening for traffic, or even probably walking in an area that's developed with small businesses or where there are a lot of driveways. You want to be able to hear traffic completely. In the mall situation that Larry described, you can definitely, and in fact in that situation I would be more likely to take it off my cane because I'm going to be using it for shore lining. And while experienced users can hear a lot more when the Case Sonar is scanning on the cane, at least at first I would take it off and basically shoreline with the Case Sonar, point it toward the wall of interest. And notice the changes in texture. It just might be that there's a real interesting stone piece of pillar with some glass and stuff around it that really is a good sound cue that tells you that Radio Shack is real close. But you can count openings. It can be helpful in some wide open areas. It can be very helpful in wide open areas in the 5 meter range if they're not really packed with people. When an area is very packed with people, then the way you're going to use the K-sonar is to find holes in the crowd and ways to be able to maneuver through the crowd without hitting people in the ankles so much with your cane. But where you've got some clear space so that you can actually reach the edges of the environment, you can do a really nice job of trailing.
Now, what about, Terry, in a grocery store? Are you able to actually identify, major kinds of products? So, like, say, I'm going down the aisle and I see the bread or the washing mm-hmm. detergent, the big boxes mm-hmm. versus the plastic wrapper mm-hmm. type of things. Is that practical to do that kind of thing?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No. You could do a much better job of that tactually.
Yeah.
However, in a grocery store, the K-sonar will help you stay in the aisle. It's great for noting the big those displays that they stick out in unpredictable uh-huh. places, and it can give you a lot of information, but not that.
And do you have any personal stories you could share with us about? I take it you're fairly much of an expert with this. Is that?
I am a user. I decided to test my own philosophy, and I took the K-sonar when we were up to a floor of the building here at APH that I know, but that I don't know real well, or that at that time I didn't. And I put the headphones on. And walked around. I knew that there were no stairs in any place that I would encounter, and that it was a time when very few people were out, so I wasn't going to freak them out. And I focused solely on the K-sonar. I didn't use a cane, didn't use a guide dog. I did this just, as I say, in a really safe area. And I found that somehow I always knew where I was, and when I thought a room was a certain thing, it was. And if I wasn't sure, I would stop and scan around with the K-sonar, and all of a sudden, without even knowing how, I couldn't verbalize how I knew, but I think this might be the library. And it would be. And there is a way that this really does get into your perceptual system.
Wow. Now, do you use this all the time?
No, I do not. I am a dog guide user, and if I were to using the K-sonar with a guide dog, I would use it handheld. There's no way to mount it. Well, you could mount it on a dog's harness, presumably, but then you'd just be seeing your dog.
And you know what she looks like.
Right, so that's not really that effective. But I do use it at times, and I find it very, very helpful.
Terry, can you talk a little bit about how this is powered? I assume it's battery-powered.
Yeah, yes.
You recharge it?
It is. It's it's powered by a cell phone battery, and the battery life is expected to be about 3 years before battery needs replacing, as with most cell phone batteries. It is rechargeable. It comes with an AC adapter charger, and it... the user at this time cannot replace the battery. That may change in future versions. The battery works for about 6 to 8 hours of continuous scanning and noise making, which is more than people would typically do in a day, and it recharges overnight in about 8 hours. I also wanted to say that when you plug the charger in, And the AC adapter is attached to current on its other end, the K-sonar makes a little beep. This is perfectly normal, good, and wonderful. I forgot this fact on one of my early... I've done a bit of demonstrating this at conferences and doing some presentations about it. And I happened to forget this fact, and I plugged this thing in a hotel room in, I don't know, Pittsburgh or Wyoming or somewhere, and it squawked at me, and I thought, oh my gosh, I have killed it. It's dead. And I finally had to call Fred Gassoni, who assured me that no one was supposed to do that. So it does make a little beep when you plug it in to recharge it, so you know it's getting power, getting current.
Okay, that's a good thing. Yes. What about the... I'm curious, what does K sonar mean? What's the K?
Okay. The K actually stands for... I was afraid you would ask me that. It does not actually stand for Leslie K. Leslie K is the developer of the K sonar and has been a developer of ultrasound devices for persons who are blind or visually impaired since the early 60s. However, he uses a technology that he calls CASPA, which is K Advanced, and I'm sorry, Leslie, I can't do it off the top of my head. But the K in CASPA actually does come from his name. But the K sonar refers to the CASPA technology, his type of sweep sonar, which can provide rich, detailed information. And sonar, because it uses sonar. Incidentally, Leslie Kay was did work in the 50s for the British Navy on defensive sonar devices used to detect submarines.
Is that right?
And coming from that, he realized how much applicability there is to work with devices for blind persons.
And finally, we probably should talk about cost and availability.
Indeed. The current cost of the K sonar is $710. It is available exclusively in the United States and its territories, exclusively from the American Printing House for the Blind for this price. And we have them in stock. They're here.
And what about, I know with a lot of our products, we have, people can look at the manual ahead of time. Did we ever make any arrangements to?
Yes. We come with the K sonar, people receive a cassette, which is really not a manual, but it is a sort of a show-and-tell cassette that Fred Gassoni does that gives you kind of what we've done in this podcast, a feel for the different things you can do with the K-Sonar to help you get started in the learning process.
Okay.
And, of course, it provides all of the necessary things about, you know, the maintenance, the battery, and the controls as well.
Excellent. You've been very, very informative, Terry. And I want to tell our listeners that I promise you we will get Terry back on the show because I would like to interview her about some of the other projects she has in the works and some of the other things that she's got that are about to come out and have just come out. Can we get that commitment from you, Terry?
You most certainly can. Right. I would be delighted to come back, and I want to thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure. Have a good day, evening, whichever part of the world you're in when you hear this, and thanks for listening.
And on to our user feedback from the comment line, which you can reach at 206-984-9203.
Hi, Larry and Blind Cool Tech listeners. This is Robert Carter calling in. I'm a little behind on my podcast listening because of the ACB convention, but I just listened to your July 2nd podcast on digital recorders. I wanted to comment that I have the Olympus VN120, which I purchased fairly recently from Radio Shack. This model has been discontinued, and so it's a little hard to find, but it's available from Radio Shack at a great price if you can find it. It's there for $39 with a $10 mail-in rebate, making it $29. It will record for 2 hours, a little more than your V90. It operates very similar to the V90, although your recorder seems a little bit more accessible in terms of accessing folders and it's a little easier to delete on your recorder. They've changed the firmware, apparently, in the VN120. Requires a couple more keystrokes to delete a message than the one that you described on Blind Cool Tech. Nevertheless, it's very accessible, very easy to use. They also offer a VN240, which is available for $10 more, and it has twice the recording time. It has 4 hours recording time. So anyway, I just thought I would pass that information along in case people are interested, that these little digital recorders are available at a good price from Radio Shack. Thanks a lot.
Okay, appreciate the information, Robert. As always, good information. Here's our next comment.
Hi, Larry. This is Michael Massey here in Pueblo, Colorado. And yes, I spoke with you earlier, but thought I'd also put this on the comment line. It seems like no matter what program I've tried to listen to just by streaming it, it just seems as if the programs don't seem to want to load. And yet, 2 weeks ago, when I listened to some of the earlier episodes of your podcast, they loaded just fine. And now I don't know what's going on, but I wanted to listen to the NLS presentation. And then I wanted to listen to the accessible cell phone presentation and haven't been able to do that. And I'm hoping that your problem with the server is going to be remedied soon, because this is very inconvenient. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope others are leaving comments that are going to help maybe move things along a little bit. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the comment, Michael. We have been having some issues with a little bit of overload on the server. One thing I can suggest that may help, instead of trying to stream it, download iPodder from jeffbishop.com and subscribe to the show and let it download overnight. I've been doing it that way from home, and it always gets it. It may be a little slow, and it depends on the time of day that you're doing it. So, and that way you won't have to sit there and wait on the slow server. I recognize that we do need to do something about that, and we will. I apologize for the inconvenience. And finally, we have one other comment.
Hi there, Larry. It's Dick Wamser calling from Brookings. He used to live there. He just moved Roseburg, Oregon. And just heard your thoroughly fascinating tour of APH as far as the talking book production is concerned, which I really enjoyed. I was there in 1967, just as the Arab-Israeli War was going on. I heard Ryan Halloran and Livingston Gilbert reading a Newsweek magazine through those speakers that you had shown us. And then in 1996, I took another tour of the printing house and didn't get very much of a tour, unfortunately. The thing that really amazed me was how the cassette tapes are produced, how they're put together and so on. It's quite an elaborate process, I know, and it's very noisy, and it's also restricted because of the humidity and temperature controls in there. But if you could go through that again, that would be just a fascinating thing. I just can't imagine that much happening that quickly, and the processes are just unbelievable, and nothing ever gets tangled up. Well, I'm sure it must, but 9 times out of 10, it goes through quite a production schedule, 40 books at a time, and no problem. I know there's also a link on the website that has a talking book production, but that's mostly visual from what I've been able to determine. There's not really much audio involved in that. But if you could do that again, great. If you cannot do it again, that's still okay. What you did do was fantastic, and I really appreciate having the opportunity of hearing that. I've got a friend in San Antonio, Texas, who is not computer literate, so I took that particular recording and put it onto a cassette tape, and also the NLS meeting that you had at the NFB convention on a cassette tape, and I'll send that to her tomorrow, and I'm sure she'll be fascinated by that as well. Keep up the good work. I really do enjoy it, and looking forward to hearing many more.
Okay, thanks for the comments, and we will definitely try to get in there to the cassette duplication room and give you a little more detail and some sound seeing of all those machines whirring and all that tape flying. It is fascinating. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us today. Oh, whoa, excuse me. I do have one other announcement. Dean Martineau from Top Dot Enterprises sent a fascinating email to me. Apparently he collects tech tidbits and has a list that you can subscribe to get news of the top tech tidbits on Thursdays. He sends it out, and he calls this list TTTT. So you can actually subscribe to it by sending a blank email to www.ttt-join@top.enterprises.com. Good work, Dean, and appreciate the information. I know I'll be subscribing. And that will do it for issue 44 of Blind Cool Tech. I'm your host, Larry Skutkan. Please call our feedback line at 206-984-9203 or drop us an email at blindcooltech@gmail.com. You can also visit our website at aph.org/tech/bct.htm. We'll see y'all next time.